welcome to Real Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 15th of May, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshank, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, it's the start of another week, and we are here to look over the news that will be of interest to British nationalists, and we have a guest host today. We have Sam Melia with us, who is the regional organiser for Patriotic Alternative Yorkshire, who is also the husband to Laura Towler, the deputy leader of Patriotic Alternative, and also the host of Tea Time with Sam and Laura at his Odyssey channel. Sam, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, Sven. Thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to this. I've been following the news all week just so I could have the hot takes ready for you. And thank you for having me.
Excellent, excellent. I look forward to getting into the show with you. And we, as I say, we've got four news stories to be getting into. And the first one is a follow-up on this news story that happened with the pub with the gollywogs in it. And I've talked about this a bit before and the awful things that happened to them, that the pub got the windows smashed in. They had a racist in white paint that was painted on the outside of it. And the company that was providing the beer and providing the glasses, they stopped doing that for them, and they were effectively chased out of the country simply for having these gollywogs in their pub. And the effect of that is that I think everybody is now terrified of that sort of thing that could happen to them. And something like that has now happened again, and this is in Devon. An ornamental figure of a clothed monkey holding out a tray has been removed from an Exmouth cafe following a complaint from a customer that it was offensive. Thoughts at Foxholes in Queen's Drive opposite Exmouth Lifeboat Station had the figure, said to be a business card holder, standing on the counter of its serving hatch. The owners have confirmed this week that it is now no longer on display. They have assured that no offence was intended and they do not condone racism of any kind. The news has been welcomed by the complainant. The customer, who asked not to be named, said, "I was recently at Forts and noticed that they have a figurine of a monkey depicted as a human being begging for money. I believe they used it for tips. Given the heightened issue in the pub in the UK displaying golly dolls and the fact that these types of caricatures are racist towards black people, I asked to speak to the manager about it, but they were not there. A member of staff seemed to be indifferent about the figurine, saying it was just decor. It is highly offensive. I'm very glad the owners have since decided to remove the figure. It is really important that we reflect on how welcoming and inclusive our environments are here in the Southwest to people of all backgrounds. Fortes is a popular cafe along Exmouth seafront, and it offers customers the option of both a takeaway or a seated service. Claire Hurd, who runs the cafe with her husband Andy, said, "We would never endorse the use of any item which may have racist connotations, as we take this very seriously. The figure of a monkey business card holder was removed as soon as the gentleman mentioned it may cause offence. We invite the gentleman to contact us directly for us to apologise further, if he wishes, and we thank him for his comments." So they're sort of bending over backwards to apologise, and I think it's out of fear of what happened with this other pub, and it's quite ridiculous. I mean, what is there to infer that that's actually a racist? What is there to infer that it has anything to do with black people at all? It's a monkey in a suit. I mean, what are we going to do now? Ban chimpanzees' tea parties? Ban any representation that we have of chimpanzees or monkeys pretending to be humans? What about the organ grinder and the monkey and the little monkey that wears a waistcoat that dances on top of the organ? Are we going to ban that as well? I mean, this just seems absolutely ridiculous to me. There was nothing to say that this was supposedly a representation of a black man. It was quite obvious that it was a chimpanzee. These are all sorts of parts of like our history that had nothing to do with racism. Yet people that just are looking to be offended, they make a fuss about this. And because of this, what happened with this pub with the golly dolls, that's why the person who runs the cafe is bending over backwards and saying, "Please come back and we'll personally apologise to you." And you know, she's really grovelling over this. I think it's a shame that she's got rid of this. What are your thoughts on it, Sam?
Yeah, when I first read this story, I was thinking, I thought the statue was of a kind of similar gollywog figure. it's literally a monkey. Like it's not intended to be an exaggerated caricature of a black person or anything. It's literally hair on face, you know, gorilla faced monkey wearing like a giraffe suit and everything. And it's like I've seen these around And there's a kind of holdover, I think, from when people used to kind of travel to Africa and stuff like that. And it is sad to see that people are scared. I mean, these owners, they seem genuinely kind of like anti-racist types. And I just don't think that they'd seen a monkey and been like, that's an allegory for a black guy. But clearly this customer was very sensitive to the this idea that it could be, which kind of says more about the customer than it does about the owners. But it's really bad. I mean, if the pub with the gollywogs, it's just the gollywog is, I mean, it was the symbol of, what was it? Was it a jam?
Robertson's.
Robertson's. Yeah. It was a symbol for them for ages. And then gollywogs have just been ubiquitous around the UK for God knows how long. And then they've just reached this point now where it's like even seeing one is the equivalent of like slapping a black person across their face. And it's madness. Me and Laura were walking around the other day and there was a shop that had some gollywogs in the window, and it was a haberdashery, you know, like a sewing shop and everything. And I thought like, oh God, that, you know, considering what's happened with the pub, it must be a based shop or whatever. And then it's like, we went in and it was a black woman running it. And it's just like, oh, right. It's like, is it like the N-word? It's like, you're the only ones left who can have these things in shop windows. It's like, no one else is, these are our dolls, you know? I mean, for them to be, it's like, please get in touch so we can apologize further. That is really sad to see. And I mean, considering what like the other stories we're going to be covering today, to see white people so scared of making any offense, whereas on the other side, they're just bold as brass, like they're willing to tell you exactly what they think and they're not afraid of any repercussions whatsoever.
Did you talk to the lady in the shop at all and ask her about it? What did she say?
Yeah, because Laura's just getting into crocheting, so she had some ideas. I think she wants to make some poppies for Remembrance Sunday this year. So she wanted some colours, and there's different gauges of wool or whatever it is that they use. And spoke to her. It still throws me a bit. You know, someone is fully black, but then they've got like, they've clearly been raised here, like, I don't know, second, third generation, whatever. So it's like they've got a very local accent to Yorkshire, and it's like, it still throws you. Cause you get a lot of Indians who, they've still got that. They've got a very specific, like, kind of Asian accent to their English, speech. Whereas, for her, she was just straight up like, it's like, oh God, it's like, if you didn't see her, then you'd think you were just looking at another English woman. And she was really pleasant, you know, and it's just like, didn't speak to her about the gollywogs because it was kind of, so we were just kind of surprised. But yeah, it's an odd thing to see. And to see them now, it is very much, it's become a statement now. And it's like, because these things like the pub are getting so much airtime, if you still have them up now, then it's going to be quite clear on what side your politics lie. I mean, most people are just like, don't care. Like, it's they don't want to fall trapped to this kind of woke thing. So they'll, if they have them up, I don't think it's necessarily saying like, I'm an ethno-nationalist, like, you know, I believe in repatriation or anything like that. I think, I had years ago, I remember seeing something like a jumble sale, and I was with my ex at the time, and I picked him up and you know, paid for him £2 or whatever. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, you never see these around anymore. You know, it's a little piece of history. And at some point during the day, I'd set my bag down, and it's like my ex had actually taken them out of my bag and put them in someone else's bag. And when I got home, I was like, where's my gollywog? And she's like, oh, I took it out. I put it in someone else's bag. And I was like, what? And I was like, you better hope you didn't put it in a black guy's bag. It's going to be counted as like a hate crime. You've insulted them. But I was gutted. I was like, oh man, you never see gollywogs around. It's people kind of tacitly know that it's like any mockery of the black form or whatever could be a one way ticket to a hate crime charge.
Yeah, I don't think it's mocking at all. I mean, that's the thing I've never understood about it. I mean, you've got a cheerful figure with a smile, a happy face. It's a caricature, obviously. I mean, we do have caricatures, but it's accentuating the happy, nice, good parts of black people, isn't it? You know, it's a smiley creature. Inoffensive. But I would have thought that the woman that displayed it, maybe she was showing her support for these things and saying, well, it's absolutely ridiculous that you shouldn't be able to display this part of my childhood. And she may have deliberately put them in the window to show support for this pub. I mean, you never know.
I'd take a swing back that way. It was a ways away from where we live, but I'm over that way often. I'd swing back through, make some excuses for buying a bag of wool or something like that, and just be, it's like, oh, it's funny you've got the guy on the, oh, that's crazy about that pub, isn't it? And see what she says, and I'll be sure to report back.
Yeah, I mean, if she's got them prominently displayed, it's obviously because it's a conversation starter. She wants to talk about the reason why she's got them there, I would have thought. I mean, she may be supportive. I mean, a lot of black people don't like what's going on, and the way that these things are now all seen as hate crimes. And there's this black farmer, I think he calls himself, from Devon, who's a conservative, and he seems the sort of person that would say how ridiculous that was. And it's a part of our history. But to take it back to the monkey aspect of this, I mean, what about PG Tips? Didn't they used to dress chimpanzees up all the time in order to advertise tea?
Didn't they get in some sort of trouble, or was that just for the like animal rights kind of abuses that they were doing? Like, kind of,
I think animal rights.
I'm trying to remember if anyone brought up anything like that, because I mean that'd be a very kind of easy. It's like, well, what are you trying to say? But I mean, they were clearly emulating essentially just a white English family, but with monkeys. It would be a very easy point to make. It's like, well, why did you choose monkeys? I mean, especially it's like the tea isn't farmed in Africa, to my knowledge, I don't think.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's just
it's kind of an odd mascot to choose, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just being cute, really. I mean, we find animals that have been anthropomorphized very cute. I mean, people put clothes on dogs, don't they? And they put clothes on cats, and they put a little scarf on the dog. And I think it's just obviously trying to be cute with a chimpanzee that's been anthropomorphized. And as you said, it says more about the customer than anything else, because it's the customer that is projecting racism onto that image. Obviously not intended to represent a black person. It was representing a chimpanzee. It's the person who was going into the shop that is linking the two together. Not the person that actually made this chimpanzee, which was just a way to collect money. And yeah, it's a shame that this woman didn't say, well, look, you're the one that is saying that it's racist and it somehow has a link to black people, not me. And obviously it's not a black person. It's a chimpanzee. You're the one with a problem.
It's similar to the way, did you see that study where it turned out that liberals are guilty of like code switching around black people more than kind of right wingers are? And by code switching, I mean like using maybe more childish language or simplistic language around black people, which kind of betrays the fact that they understand that they don't see them as exactly like themselves. Like, they're not as colorblind as they claim to be. And I mean, for you to be so, I mean, it's that kind of hatchling thing where it's kind of like, I don't understand racism, but at the same time, it's like you very much understand why people have compared black people to monkeys in the past. And you're saying, it's like, I understand that comparison, I recognize it, and I'm going to be very vigilant to make sure no one makes it again. And it's like, right, so we're not completely ignorant to what's gone on in history, are we? It's like, we understand that these comparisons have been made, and now you're being
perpetuating
extra astute on them.
Yeah, they're just perpetuating it, aren't they? They're basically perpetuating it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, how many black people have been through that shop and like they've not even thought about, you know, monkey wearing a giraffe suit and gone, it's like, is this me? You know, but for this presumably white person who's come in there and started kicking off, they've gone, it's like, monkey? Do you mean black people? And it's like, the owner's like, what? I don't know where you've come up with this. It's like, do this guy for hate crime, man. It's like coming in there, making comparisons to monkeys and blacks.
Oh.
everyone's I would never, just, you know.
Everyone's just terrified of putting a foot out of line or any racial connotation whatsoever, because they know that if, for instance, she made the arguments and said, well, look, this isn't racist. You know, those PG tips, it's a tradition that we have of dressing animals up in clothes. Then he would have complained some more, and she could have ended up having her shop windows or her cafe windows smashed and racist all painted on the outside. It's like we have this really intolerant society today. We don't tolerate people having different opinions or different ideas. Mm.
Once you're marked for that treatment as well, yeah, it's very much a fear campaign, and
it
doesn't matter if the complainer was proven wrong. The fact that you didn't bend the knee as soon as the complaint was made is the issue, and you'd be hounded out for that alone.
Yeah, it's a similar thing with this next news story that I've got here as well. And I think what went on here, it's basically this black actress, and she said that the royal family were terribly white. And I think she was expecting to be rewarded for that, because most of the time people are rewarded for saying something is terribly white, there's not enough diversity. I mean, it's a common thing to say. And she also plays somebody white in a historical period drama. And obviously she's used to being patted on the back for that and saying, well, isn't it great we've got somebody black that's in this historical period drama. So she thought she was going to get rewarded, and of course she wasn't rewarded. And I talked about this a bit last week, but it's still going. The news story is still going because there have been so many complaints about this. ITV has been hit with 4,165 Ofcom complaints after Bridgerton star Ajoa Ando prompted fury by calling the Buckingham Palace balcony terribly white, making it the most complained about moment of the year. Despite the overwhelming number of complaints, the broadcaster has maintained a wall of silence and refused to comment on the record figures released today. Miss Ando, who appeared as a guest during ITV's coverage of King Charles III's coronation, made the comment when the royals were standing on the Buckingham Palace balcony to watch the traditional red arrows fly past. The 60-year-old, who plays Lady Agatha Danbury in the Netflix show, said, "Looking at all those young people, there is a bit of me that has gone from the rich diversity of the Abbey to the terribly white balcony. I'm very struck by that. I am also looking at those younger generations and thinking, what are the nuances that they will inhabit when they grow?" But her comments were met with a fierce backlash among disappointed viewers who pledged to report it to the watchdog. The actress backtracked the following day, insisting in a BBC interview that she had meant no offence. But that too sparked another furious response from listeners, who criticised the presenter for failing to challenge her views. Instead, Radio 4 host Paddy O'Connell told Miss Ando that she had nothing to apologise for. Ofcom has now received a staggering 4,165 complaints, making it the most complained about moment this year. It has attracted almost double the amount of complaints made after a segment on the Jeremy Vine show about junior doctors. News of the record number of Ofcom complaints prompted comments from some of Britain's top journalists. Former editor of The Sun, Kelvin McKenzie, tweeted, "I see there have been 4,165 complaints to Ofcom about Ajoa Ando calling the palace balcony terribly white. But surely there should be as many complaints about the hopeless ITV news presenter Tom Bradby for not taking her to task. Not a journalist, just an overpaid auto-cue reader." And numerous people took to Twitter to voice their outrage, with one commenter slamming her comments as ridiculous and asking, "How can she get away with that? Any white person would have to make a public apology." And I guess people are looking at it and saying, well, if somebody just say, well, how terribly black that was, if there was a black family on the television, they would rightfully be castigated for that, and people would rightfully complain about that. And I don't quite know how the royal family could be anything different than white if it's European royalty. I mean, the royal family, the monarchy, it's all based on ancestry. It's based on who your ancestors were. It's not people that have been voted into office. So I think she was expecting to be rewarded for this because, as I say, because she plays aristocracy in a Netflix show, and she's been patted on the back for that, and people are saying, isn't this wonderful to see all this diversity in historical period dramas? She was expecting to be rewarded for saying, well, there should be some diversity in the royal family, shouldn't there? And she wasn't. She was certainly slapped down for this, and there's been masses of complaints. audience, but you would think that ITV would apologize for it. And as you said here as well, that this Paddy O'Connell, he told her she had nothing to apologize for, even though thousands of people have been really offended at what she said. Have you heard about this, Sam? What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I caught this live. I think we were around at Grandma Towler's house and just caught a little bit of the coronation. And it was the bit where they were out on the balcony giving the wave and everything. And yeah, it does kind of imply that as the demographics of the country changed due to immigration, like the royal family is supposed to look at it, it's like, right, okay, 15% Asian, so we need 1.5% of the children to be marrying Asians. And it's 5% black, okay, we need half of Prince George to be marrying a black woman. You know, it's kind of like, it's insane. It's like, yeah, this is the royal family. And it's like, you had one, Markle marry into it. And it's like she caused such a ruckus that eventually her and Harry had to like leave. And it was Harry was kind of wandering around the ceremony like a kind of lost puppy, not really knowing where to stand or what to do. This character, I've seen this Bridgerton advertised a lot. It's a real kind of Netflix kind of banner show. And I'd assumed they were doing this kind of like period drama, except we just insert black people and we don't make mention of it and we just treat them as the same as anything else. But looking into the background of this story and this actress, they've got the newest Bridgerton's called like Queen Charlotte, and it's like this first black queen. And I was just like, God, you know, once again, they're doing it. But there's a quote from the show where this actress who called the royal balcony terribly white says to Queen Charlotte, "You are the first of your kind. Do you not see what you are meant to do for us?" So it's like, look, and the rest of these quotes, it's like, it's very much, it's talking about race in this, sorry, Catherine's just kicking off in the background. It's talking about race within this scenario. But of course, the black people are aristocracy as well, but I guess just not as accepted aristocracy as the white people. But it's like, well, there's still proles about, you know, there's still serfs, you know, there's the people on the streets. It's like, you know, who I presume are white and black in this kind of crazy world where Bridgerton exists. And yet this actress, I mean, clearly, if you work for Netflix, you work on this kind of show, you are just getting every day getting bigged up. I mean, probably, you know, they'll hit cut on the end. On the end of a scene, and I imagine like half the staff there are like clapping, like amazing. Oh, I can't believe the difference we're making with this show. And it just gins you up in thinking it's like, oh, I can get away with it's like, why is this royal family white? And it's like, because this one exists in reality, love. That's why it's white. Similar to you know, there's plenty of African kings and queens, and you'll find they're all black. It tends to be the way. And it's like they're not all going to be looking like Bridgerton up there. It would be kind of odd if they did. It's wildly infuriating, and I'm glad they got a ton of complaints. Apparently, it's the most complained about thing this year, which is saying a lot considering how much people complain about stuff. But I know there's been stuff that's been taken down with two or three Ofcom complaints for being racist, and then this thing catches. Was it 4,500 near enough? And there just seems to be no mention of this. And this is the thing. These things are always allowed to slip. There's not a single thing a white person can say that could even be accidentally construed as racist that won't end up with their like career ruined. But these people are allowed to just get away with saying things like terribly white. I mean, to put that kind of adjective before black, you'd be done, you know, you're never going on TV again. But this lady is just going to go from strength to strength. There needs to be, I know Morgoth coined the term skintellectual. There needs to be something for these like actresses and actors who kind of, they get these roles, they get put into these roles and suddenly they think they're, I don't know, the next Abraham Lincoln, like it's like fighting for these rights, you know, it's like you're an actress, love. You get told what to say, and frankly, you should have kept to the script because now you've caused. I mean, hopefully, it caught a lot of other people's eyes. You know, if 4,500 people complained, hopefully, there's 4.5 million who saw it and went like, you know, what the hell? And all this stuff kind of serves to help wake more and more people up and to realize that diversity just means less white people.
Yeah, it's interesting when they, whenever they put black people into these historical dramas, they also project modern ideas about racism into them, and they have them being discriminated against. And what you were saying there about they say to this queen, "Oh, you're the first of your kind," and all of this, and there wasn't such a thing as racism until we had multiculturalism, until you had like the two or more groups living together within one territory. There wasn't any discrimination against people, and white people were fascinated by black people and non-whites, especially in the New World, and we came up with the science of anthropology so that we could study them. We certainly didn't look down on them or hate them because of the color of their skin or discriminate against them or think of prejudice against them, which is all projected into these, you know, into these historical dramas that they do when it just didn't exist. And another point I wanted to bring up there as well, when you brought up Meghan Markle and the problems that she caused for the royal family. And one of them, the main one, was when she said that when she was pregnant, and she said that somebody from the royal family wondered aloud how dark the baby's skin might be. And that's pretty much the same as saying, well, I wonder if he's going to have ginger hair. It's the equivalent of that. And yet this was made out to be this horrible, discriminatory, obviously racist thing that one of these royals had said. And she made this big thing about this. And I think that, you know, that's a genuine question that a grandparent is going to have. If their grandson has married somebody who is non-white, they're obviously going to wonder how dark the skin's going to be.
I was listening to a show with a comedian, Jim Jefferies. He's an Australian comedian. He's married a Indian actress, and he was saying how his Indian wife loves the royals and everything like that. Was following all the coronation stuff, and he recalled watching I think it was the Oprah interview that Meghan Markle did, where she was like, and then they asked me, "What do you think the skin tone will be?" And Oprah was like, "Oh my god!" And Jim's Indian wife was going like, "Oh my god, I can't believe they asked that." And Jim was saying, "It's like, what? It's like, we talked about that last week. It's like, you know, it's like, we are a mixed couple. People do think it's like, oh, I wonder if it's going to come out more my skin tone, more your skin tone. It's like, these are conversations that people have. And it seems that as soon as these things get brought up, there's just no questioning of it. And it's like, yeah, if I was with a black woman, I would be kind of curious. It's like, oh, I wonder what skin tone my child is going to come out as, because I mean, you question everything. What hair? I mean, we've talked about like me and Laura, we're like, Catherine, oh, what hair color is she going to be? That's like a constantly changing debate. It's like, oh, it looks like there's a bit of red in there. It's like a bit more blonde and everything. It's like, these things are curiosities to parents and grandparents. And it's like, just because, well, I mean, you've entered into a mixed race relationship, with that comes these extra questions. It's not now just about hair or eye color. Now it's also about skin tone. And it's like, you can't be so sensitive as to, it's like, any mention of skin tone. And that's the thing. It's this hypocrisy, or not hypocrisy. I don't know if you'd call it like a double standard, but where we have to on one side, recognize everything about race, be super respectful and acknowledge, you know, all this history and potential future, all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, also entirely race blind, never mention it. And it's like, those two positions are untenable. Like, you can't sit in both positions, which is why this world seems so crazy. That it's like, while Meghan Markle's being like, I can't believe they thought my child would be any different skin tone than, like, it's like, it's a nonsense question. Of course it's going to have a different skin tone to both you, Markle, and Harry. It's going to have a different skin tone to you both. I wonder which side it's going to go on. That is going to exist. But then also, it's like, I can't believe they asked that question. And also, you've got like Bridgerton star being like, race is at the forefront of my reality. And it's like, everything is framed within a, you know, surrounding of race. It's like, you look at that royal family up there, like, wow, Kate's looking amazing, William's looking balder by the day, you know, the kids look funny and everything like that. It's so much you could have said. And then it's like, instead you're just like, bloody hell, it's white up there, isn't it? And it's like, all right, okay. And it contextualizes everything, and it makes you, you know, we're being told that it was no big deal, that it was gospel singers at the coronation, you know, there's a rabbi there, all this kind of stuff. It's no big deal. But as soon as they're not there, ooh, that's a big deal. You know, it's like, all right, then, you know, it's like, that's why I cared that they were there. It's because you cared if they weren't there.
Yeah, it's like it was a central thing to this Anjo Adoa. It was a central thing to be thinking about race, and that was what was on her mind. Yet, if the royals think about race and to say, well, I wonder what skin tone the granddaughter will have, then that's automatically racist. So you're trying to hold two conflicting views in your mind, or two conflicting ways of doing things in your mind at the same time. And we're used to appraising people upon merit. You know, we have like a society that is built upon merit, and we're now being told that merit is not as important as race, and we should be making exceptions for race and having diversity quotas and affirmative action so that we can get more diversity into these positions, which upsets people, because we're used to being told, well, we should be colorblind, we shouldn't be seeing race at all, and we should be judging people on merit. And now we're being told, well, no, you should be seeing race, and you should be making exceptions for race, which goes completely against merit. And all of these problems, they only exist because we have multiculturalism. That's purely and simply right at the bottom of it. And there will always be fear that you've been discriminated against, even if they bring in as millions of quotas, loads of laws to prevent people from discriminating. People are still going to have that fear that they were discriminated against, whether they're white or whether they're black. Now you've got white people who are fearful that they've been discriminated against because there are diversity quotas. And you've also got black people that are fearful that they've been discriminated against because of racism. And you're never going to be able to get rid of that if you have a multicultural system. That's what is at the heart of all of these problems. Anyway, to move on to another subject, we have some rather shocking news from Scotland that's just come in. Children as young as 12 can consent to trans-affirming medical interventions, Scotland's social care watchdog has told bodies responsible for looking after the country's most vulnerable young people. So trans-affirming medical interventions, so that could be puberty blockers, but I guess that could also be breast removal surgery as well. Experts,
yeah, later on, yeah. In the article, it brings up a girl who's in care who gets a mastectomy, which is a breast tissue removal under this law as well.
I mean, that is absolutely horrific. Experts said that the Care Inspectorate's guidance issued to services responsible for children in care this week flew in the face of emerging expert evidence about the dangers of adopting an exclusively affirming approach to children who declare themselves transgender. The new rule told staff to adopt the chosen names and pronouns of young people and suggested they can refer them to the Sandyford Clinic, a controversial gender facility which has compared its own methods to those used at the disgraced Tavistock Clinic in London. The guidance stated that facilities such as toilets are only sex segregated owing to social convention, and that young trans people should be able to share bedrooms with other young people who share their gender identity, pending risk assessment. So biological males in a female bedroom. It also cited a case study in which a young person in care has been supported by a child care home to have a mastectomy. This is just horrific. The guidance pointed to Scottish legislation, which recognises that a young person aged 12 and over is presumed to have sufficient capacity to make decisions about medical treatment, although we recognise this will not always be the case. Yeah, but they're not allowed to actually buy vapes until they're 18. They can't make a decision to use an electric cigarette.
You can't have a Red Bull.
No, but you can chop your breasts off. And I guess if you're male, you could get yourself castrated. The document made no reference to the findings of the interim CAS review of gender identity services in England, which warned of possible risks in encouraging social transition of young people and a lack of evidence to support puberty blockers. Instead, the 22-page guidelines refer to controversial documents published by the Scottish National Party administration and pro-trans charities such as Stonewall and LGBT Youth Scotland, the body that helped write the guidance. So the guidance was written by these homosexual activists and trans activists. David Bell, a consultant psychiatrist who became a Tavistock whistleblower, said the document suggested a significant failure of safeguarding by the watchdog. There is now considerable evidence that just affirming children is harmful, and this guidance seems to just ignore all the emerging medical evidence. Dr. Bell said children with a conflict about gender and sexual identity need to be treated with thought and understanding. Many of these children will have a history of abuse, trauma, depression, and major family issues. Just referring to them as trans and sending them off down a medical pathway risks causing them more harm. Given the evidence we now have, this guidance is quite shocking and has the potential to be very damaging. And it is very, very harmful what's going on here. I mean, the current advice is that schools should not even be referring to people by their chosen pronouns. Last year, I think it was either Kemi Badenoch or Suella Braverman said that what the school should be doing is referring to them by the gender that is on the birth certificate until they're 18. And yet in Scotland, they've given out advice saying that teachers can diagnose a child if they're transgender from the age of 3, and teachers can then socially transition them, give them these opposite pronouns without telling the parents. And then the studies that they've done at the Tavistock Clinic have shown that when you start people on this journey, they inevitably end up with these body modifications and these surgeries and going on puberty blockers. So the social transitioning is not without these further things happening further along the line. So it's not like, oh, we can just socially transition them, and if it doesn't work out, we can just change them back again. Because they've had this transitioning, they've been told that they are the opposite gender to their actual biology, they end up having all these horrific surgeries. And then when they regret that, when they realize they were lied to and they can't change their pelvic, they can't change their hand size, they can't change their feet size, they can't change their square chin, they realize that they're never actually going to pass as a woman. And they've done all this damage to their body. They're not able to enjoy sex because of the chemicals that they've put into their body. They're never going to be able to have a proper puberty if they do stop the puberty blockers. And because they've had puberty blockers and not gone through puberty, their brains haven't developed properly. So they're never actually able to be in a condition where they're actually able to give informed consent, because they haven't actually got adult brains. And they've tried to put a stop on this in England, but in Scotland, they're now going along with this, as it says here, like with 12-year-olds, and their justification for that is the Scottish National Party. Not even scientific evidence. I mean, this is scandalous. There's more to read here, but I'll just pass it over to you, Sam, for your thoughts on this.
Yeah, these people are just complete vultures. I cannot stand these kind of trans activists whose the solution to the dissatisfaction, the high suicide rate, just the general chaos that this transgender affirmation brings about, their solution to it is just get them started earlier. And as you say, with this gender affirming thing, it's like they know what they're doing. They're just trying to get the clause in there because they know it's like, as soon as you start referring to James as Jane, and it's like and forcing everyone around them to call them Jane or whatever, then you've started down the path, and this path ends in just pain. It's like I've yet to see someone who seems to be like having gone down this path, gone through all these you know surgeries and, you know, gender affirming surgeries, rather than it's like having like your God-given bits chopped off, who are coming out and being like, great idea guys, oh, I love having my rectum turned into a vagina, that's a really good idea, you know, leaks a bit but no big deal. It's infuriating. And with this, like you say, it's like 12 years old, oh, like playing with words in order to get their agenda through. So it's like, right, a 12-year-old can consent to surgery to fix his broken leg. Could we also say that it's just surgery to have your breast removed? You know, it's just surgery to have your penis like inverted. It's like, it's not just, you're talking about these kind of life-changing effects and saying it's like, and now it's like, all right, 12. But I know there's a charity that's based out of Leeds, where I am, and it's called Mermaids, and that Ada HD, who does Drag Queen Story Hour, does a lot of work with them. But their kind of raison d'etre or whatever is to get that consent age down as low as possible, to like basically as soon as the kid goes like, I like dolls, you go, right, cool, you know, get them on the hormones and everything like that. And it's like they're absolute scum, and they've come under investigation numerous times for basically going against like parents' consent, trying to help the child transition in secret, behind the scenes. And it's horrifying to see. And now the fact that, you know, like the SNP is making it their issue to get this pushed through, it is so unpopular. So unpopular. Like, everyone hates this. You know, it's like I've got a number of people in my life, like family members, who are very kind of pro-LGBT, or should I say pro-LGB, and they have a lot of reservations about the T, because they come across people who are very mentally ill, who are kind of subscribing to this trans ideology, and they're just saying it's like this isn't right. You know, they're taking people who need help and just being, it's like you're mental, but we love it, carry on down that path, you know. And it's really, really bad. And, you know, for these kids to get taken down that path, I mean, we did the Drag Queen Story Hour protest last summer, and you would see the parents who are bringing kids to these shows, and it's like a six-year-old, and it's clearly a boy, and it's dressed like a girl, and it's like, what chance does that boy have in life? Because his parents have decided you're going to be trans. And I mean, my mum's got stories of like, was it when I was like three, I liked pushing around this pram at the playgroup, and it's like, thank God I didn't have some of the parents that are about nowadays. Or it's like this, I mean, this whole idea of transitioning a child has like, it seems to have come about in the last couple of years, tops, you know what I mean? And it's like, this has happened in history, and there's been a pushback against it, and it's like they're going hard for it again. And it's like, I think we saw a similar kind of pushback last summer with the Drag Queen Story Hour thing. They managed to shut it down by basically labeling anyone who got involved in it like, oh, you're a Nazi, which scared off a lot of people. But I think as more and more of this happens, as more and more people see it kind of encroach upon their lives, upon children who they know, you know, nieces, nephews, family members, there's going to be, I mean, there's a lot of horror stories out now. I mean, if you go, and I think a lot of them are on things like Reddit and stuff like that, but people who go through these gender affirming surgeries and they are still at an experimental phase, they do not know what they're doing. So it's like each one is slightly different and they haven't got it right yet. There's not a kind of standard. There's just like, it's like, oh, well, you know, that one's got, you know, fecal liquid leaking out of their, you know, I think they call it like a neo-vagina now. And it's like, all right, cool. What can we do to fix that? People are picking hairballs out of things. It's like, it's grim, man. And it's like, they're not telling the kids this. And it's an extension of the kind of sex education for kids as well, where they're having to boil down homosexuality into, do you like boys? Some people like boys, and that means they're gay. And it's like, you know, Jimmy's at school going, it's like, oh, my best mate's Dave, I like him, maybe am I gay? And they're like, maybe you are. And it's like, do you want to kiss Dave? You know, do you want to have sex with, do you even understand what sex is? And it's like, you know, a 9-year-old, they're going to be like, well, no, I don't. And it's like, right. So you can't really identify as homosexuality because you haven't done anything homosexual. You don't want to do anything homosexual, but we're breaking it down as to, do you like boys? And it's like, in terms of the transsexual thing, we're breaking it down to, it's like, do you feel like a girl? And they're like, I mean, what does being a girl feel like when you're 9? It's not periods. It's not, I mean, what is the female experience, you know? And it's like, they've reduced it down to, it's like, well, you want to play with girl stuff, right? And you go, I mean, they've got some cool stuff. The new Barbie's pretty boss, you know? And it's like, right, well, you want to be a girl. And it's like, you're starting children down that path with a very rudimentary understanding of what being a woman is and what it's going to mean, trying to transform your body into being a woman, because it's like, it's going to be a lot of pain, a lot of mess. And it's the child safeguarding thing, this should be immediately cut off, but it seems that everyone who's engaged in child safeguarding got there because, you know, they're right on. They understand the politics of this stuff, and I've had people in my life who are, you know, the pro-LGBT thing, and it's like when this trans stuff starts getting pushed, they don't know how to push back because it's so tightly wound in with the LGB, and they're like, oh, I'm cool with gays and everything. And they're like, all right, then, well, we're going to start gender transitioning 12 years. And they go, well, I'm not cool with that. And it's like, sorry, you a bigot? You some sort of homophobe? And they immediately shut down. So it's like the people who are supposed to be safeguarding these kids, they've got no avenue to resist it. You know, I mean, by the end of the drag queen story, I think the only people left going out and protesting these groups or these like obvious grooming events was us, because it's like we're the only ones who kind of we put who we are out on Front Street, and it's like, yeah, we have these beliefs and we're against this stuff. And for your average person, it gets very dicey, you know, once like the Nazi word starts getting thrown about, bigot and stuff like that, people start, I'm not a bigot. I just really don't think we should be transitioning kids. And it's like, well, get ready for 2023, mate, because you're either transitioning kids or you're a bigot. And it's like, you've got to get on one side of this fence, man. You cannot sit on this fence any longer, because every day that we sit on this fence, children are getting abused in this manner is horrifying.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? These are vulnerable children, innocent children that this is being done to. They're being lied to. If somebody's an adult and they want to go down this path, a body modification, I mean, that is their right. But when you've got a child and you're putting them down a path that will result in castration, will result in them never having an adult brain, never being able to actually think about things in an adult way because they've been put on these puberty blockers, never be able to enjoy sex, be infertile. And when you've got a child, they don't even know what sex is. They don't even know what enjoyment of sex is. They don't know what an orgasm is, and they never will experience that. How can they consent never to be able to enjoy sex when you don't even know what this is? This is at the heart of it. And
that's the thing, they don't build that, do they? They don't say it's like, right, there's this percentage chance of you never having sensation down there again, or the sensation you do feel is constant pain. It's like, do they build that to the kid? No, yeah, of course they don't. They just never mention that.
Constant pain, yeah. I've read the ones about constant pain, these poor detransitioners that are going through all of this. And this group, Mermaids, that you brought up there as well, and they've been in trouble for giving out chest binders to children. I think that's the main thing that they've been investigated for. And they're the ones that helped write this legislation. But and they're activists. So we've got activist experts that the government goes to for this information on this. And there's no balance there. There's no activists against all of this that speak up for the children, because as you say, that they get accused of being transphobic. So you have activists that go around the schools that speak to the teachers, that train the teachers, because they're the experts in this, but there's nobody from the other side, because the other side will be accused of being transphobic.
It's like the thing with like anti-Zionism, and it's like, is there a way to be anti-Zionist without also being anti-Semitic? Because supposedly the way to like not be anti-Semitic is to be like anti-Zionist or whatever. And it's like with this, it's like, is there a way to oppose the trans agenda without just getting labeled a transphobe and having it shut down completely? And there isn't, which means that it's like, right, so this can just steamroll ahead and just like crush everything in front of it, which is why you kind of have to take on. It's like, all right, if you're going to label me a transphobe, label me a transphobe and just be comfortable with it.
Well, that's the thing with anti-Zionism, isn't it? It's only recently that they've equated that with also being anti-Semitic. And I mean, it's criticism of the Israeli government, policy. That's what it's criticism of. It's not always criticism of Jews. I mean, it may be when people are talking about it, but they've conflated the two. So, yeah, and it's the same issue that we've got here. But you were bringing up the Drag Queen Story Hour, and I was very pleased to see that there's been some pushback against this, and not just by Patriotic Alternative. This took place in Somerset. Museum bosses have defended their decision to book a drag queen to perform a storytelling hour for local children after a women's rights group raised safeguarding concerns. Ada HD, the Storytime drag queen, will be appearing at Western Museum for the first time over the half-term holidays on June 23rd. The shows, which mark the start of UK Pride, have sold out. The Drag Queen Story Hour aim is to promote diversity, acceptance and inclusivity by providing interactive kids shows that show the world that being different is not a bad thing. It also says that the drag queens provide imaginative role models to look up to, adult entertainers for toddlers to look up to. Ada HD is the first drag artist in Europe to spread this message by reading stories to children in a nursery, as well as through publishing three children's books, so in a nursery, so three-year-olds. However, her appearance at the museum, which is run by Western Town Council, has sparked concern from campaigners for the Women's Rights Network. Campaigners say they are deeply concerned at the booking and have raised safeguarding concerns with council officials. A campaign group has also raised concern about Mrs. Samuel's fundraiser for Mermaids UK, a charity which lobbies for giving puberty blockers to children. Interesting, they're referring to him as male there, because then that's obviously his who he's legally working for is Mermaids UK, so he has to put his actual gender. And then they're referring to him as a she earlier on. Well, Women's Rights Network spokeswoman Claire Lona Reagan said, "At Women's Rights Network, we think child safeguarding should be front and centre. Town councils have a duty of care under the public sector equality duty, and public funds should not be spent on events with these safeguarding concerns. Drag Queen Story Hours held last summer at libraries across Bristol sparked protests in the city. There were also clashes outside the Tate Britain in London earlier this year when Ada HD led a storytelling event to mark LGBT plus History Month. Western Town Council bosses have defended the decision to book the storytelling event, saying they take pride in the museum on being open to all." A Western Town Council spokesman said, "Westman Museum aims to create a broad and diverse programme of events. Our events are not programmed to either promote, endorse or reconcile differing points of view." But if they're trying to show this person as a role model to look up to, that's what they're promoting. They are promoting it. I mean, they're accepting that they're promoting it. Otherwise, they wouldn't say that we're providing this role model to look up to. He says, "Rather, they aim to be inclusive and celebrate the diversity of the museum's visitors and the wider community of Western Supermare. Western Museum prides itself on being open to all. By virtue of this, there will be some events which appeal to some visitors and some that do not. This is a ticketed event in a private room. Adult entry is included in the price of the child's tickets to a parent who comes for free. As with many of our children's events, a member of the museum's team will be attending the sessions. Parents who have attended a previous performance at libraries and museums in the country have shared very positive feedback about the event, its suitability for younger audiences, and their children's enjoyment of it. The nature of the event is clearly advertised, and we believe it will attract those who feel comfortable and positive about its content." Ada HD, the Storytime drag queen, is patron of Autistic Inclusive Meets London, a professional and published children's author and a five-star Edinburgh Fringe act. "We have no reservation in programming this event and supporting those involved in it. We appreciate that some might not be interested or agree with the forthcoming Drag Queen Story Hour UK. However, we firmly believe that others should be given the chance to make that decision for themselves." So they don't address any of the safeguarding concerns. And we have this organisation here, this women's organisation that is concerned about this, the Women's Rights Network. And they're speaking up. They're saying they're deeply concerned. They've raised the safeguarding concerns. And the response is not to address any of the safeguarding concerns at all. It's to say, well, he's at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Oh, and he works for an autistic charity. And they're saying, well, look, this is not on.
it's like this modern kind of phenomenon of like credentialism, where it's like you can have something clearly, plainly in front of your eyes, and it's like, oh, but the credentials are there, so I can ignore that. And it's like this thing. He infuriates me so much, this guy, because he's so in your face about what he's doing. And then, but at the same time being like, whoa, why? What are you trying to accuse me of? I just want to tell stories to kids and everything. And he is a published author. I think he self-publishes though, because I think he sells by his own store. So I don't know if like Amazon self-printing is really classed as being published. but he's got this like a three goats book where it's like a brown, black and a pink goat ally against a white wolf. If you can try and, you know, imagine the allegory that's trying to sell. There's another one where he's got two lesbian hedgehogs who play with each other's snot. I mean, I don't even want to think about what's going on there. And then the latest book he released over Christmas was My First Pride, about a kid who goes to his first pride parade. So it's like he's kind of going mask off with that last one, where it's like, yeah, this is about turning your kids gay, these books. And with these events, as you say, with the women's groups, they're really good. And a lot of them are headed up by, there's a kind of lesbian element to it. And I think the LGB, some of them are very combative against the T. And in this case, obviously, I guess Sab Samuels is trans now. I wasn't aware he was going by the female pronoun now. Thank you for your contribution, Catherine. At the Leeds protest that we did, there was a representative there from one of these women's groups, and her speciality was safeguarding, and was just saying, it's like, this person is an activist and he's being allowed in front of kids. He's got an agenda to being in front of them. Let's not pretend like he just loves reading books, you know, and just happens to be in front of children. It's like, no, he's very much, he talks about, like, I want to be a role model for kids, you know, talking about things like queer joy and all this kind of stuff. He is an advocate for transitioning children. And that needs to be recognized in terms of the safeguarding thing. I think at the Leeds event he did, a fire alarm was pulled, and they ignored the fire alarm and had a disco on the top floor of a building. And it's like, you know, fire safety, the top floor is like the worst place to be. So, but it's like the fire alarm's being pulled. Even if it's a joke, you bail out, because what if it's not? And it's like, but because you were so adamant to not allow the far right to shut down your protest, you ignored a fire alarm. And it's like, I mean, thank God, you know, it was someone who just, I guess, went in there and pulled something, or someone burnt some toast inside the museum cafeteria or something. I don't know what happened, but it's like, this is someone who really shouldn't be around children, if only for the agenda, but also because it's like, there's been blatant disregard for safeguarding rules. And I'm glad that organized groups like the women's groups are activated against this. But there is a lot of internal conflict. I know I keep talking about the Leeds demo, but it's like kind of a point of reference. But there was disagreements amongst the left-wing crowd. Like, there were some people who there was like an element of Antifa that was like trans exclusionary, and there was another element of Antifa who were trans inclusionary. And it's like, they had like, it's like, we're going to be on this side of the protest, and it's like, if you're trans, this is a safe space for you, whatever. As if like the other Antifa is going to be like, oh, I'm going to glass you if you're trans, whatever. It's wild. And it's like, he seems to be doing another round this summer. I think he's doing a solid month at the Edinburgh Fringe. I can't imagine it's the same parents bringing them back day after day after day. So I've got to imagine it's like people are traveling to bring their kids to this thing. It's becoming like a pilgrimage of basically like kind of showing your fealty to the trans agenda. It's like, you know, it's like, I will offer up my children to this event. You know, it's like, I went there when others wouldn't. This Sab is a complete scumbag, and he invites this opposition, where he's kind of like, it's like, oh, you know, he taunts the far right and everything like that. And it's like, dude, no, this is normal people. Everyone who sees this goes, this is wrong. There's an argument in one of the comments there being like, because someone raises the thing, it's like, you know, drag queens are adult performers. You know, for tea time with Sam and Laura, me and Laura watched a few episodes of that RuPaul's Drag Race, like the biggest show on Netflix for a while. And it's like, literally everything they say is about sex. It's just sex, 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 constantly with these people. It's heavily implied that, like, surrounding performances, there's a lot of sex, a lot of drugs going on. You know, I mean, they're all happening in clubs, adult clubs. And someone said, it's like, you know, oh, we wouldn't invite strippers to come speak to children. And someone was like, it's like, oh, what are you going to do, strip in front of the kids? It's like, no, we're not saying that Sam Samuels is going up there and like miming sucking off dudes or anything like that. It's like he probably does do a very kind of child-friendly performance. The problem is that you've now put a drag queen in front of children and said, like, isn't this person great? Which means the kids then go home and go like, oh, I guess I like drag queens now. Let me look them up. Oh, you know, there's like, I mean, half of them, their names are references to sex. Like, there's like, oh, look, it's a lot of vagina or something like that, you know? And it's like, it starts the kids down this path. And it's the same thing with the language up in Scotland, where it's like, oh, you know, maybe we can just find a workaround for once they start down this path, there's really no way back. And with the drag queens thing, it's like, as soon as you get kids thinking, it's like, oh, drag queens are cool, drag queens are fun, drag queens are something that kids can get involved with, then it's like, there's, I mean, it literally starts and ends with Drag Queen Story Hour. It's like, as soon as you go beyond that, drag queens are like, it's basically just like gay porn, you know. It's like there's no let up from them. So that's why that's why we can't even allow you to have a story hour, because there's no child friendly drag queen circles to run around in. It's like, it's Drag Queen Story Hour, and then the next thing you know, you're in a club, and it's what's that kid over in America called?
Desmond is amazing.
Yeah, you're getting dollar bills tucked into your son's G-string, you know what I mean? It's like, that's where that's the next step, you know. So it has to be cut off right at the start, right at the stem, because we can't go down this path. And but I mean, you look at the kids and the parents who are bringing them to these things, and it's like the kids are already heading down that path. This is merely like a kind of affirmation ritual, you know. It's like, my kid is going to be gay, it's going to be trans or whatever. This is merely just a piece of entertainment to kind of affirm that fact. I can post about it on social media about how much of an ally I am. Oh, and by the way, you know, Desmond is now, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a woman's name beginning with D, Deirdre. And you can imagine being trans and being like, my name's Deirdre. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. But yeah, it needs opposing. And I know there's already plans for demonstrations at these events in the works this summer, so I'm looking forward to engaging in them again as well.
Yeah, that's a good thing to see, is that there's Women's Rights Network that is protesting against it. There's parents that are protesting against it. It's not just nationalists or the so-called far right. And as you pointed out there, there's Seb Samuels. I mean, he accuses everybody that goes there to protest against him as being the far right, but he is completely open about what his agenda is. I mean, he's saying, like, I want to be a queer role model for children. So he wants to be a queer role model for 2 and 3 year olds. I've also read interviews with him where he said, children have come out as gay to me. So literally 3, 4 year olds are telling him that they're gay. Where have they got that idea from?
Yeah. What does that mean to a 3 or 4 year old? Do they know what gay means? No, of course they don't. And if they do, then it means that they're essentially being abused, because it's like a 3 or 4 year old has no business knowing that kind of like element of being an adult.
Well, that's what it was saying in that Scottish piece earlier, wasn't it? That these children come from areas where there may have been abuse, and the effect of the abuse may result in a child then identifying as homosexual or experimenting with homosexual acts amongst other children.
Oh, dude, that was the thing on RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, they would constantly be getting into like talks, like kind of teary talks about their parents and their family history and everything like that. They've all been abused. And it's kind of like, you're not really selling like gays are just like you or me, because it's like they've all got some like horrible relationship with their father. Either they were like sexually abused or abandoned. And it's like, God, you're not healthy. You know, you've got issues, and it's like, they need to be addressed properly. Rather than just being, it's like, I just, you know, a lot of them talk about how this drag persona is the only thing that keeps them going, and it's like they kind of suppress all of their issues that they have in their regular life, and they try and live as much as these kind of drag personalities as possible, because it's like their actual life is so painful, and it's like everything that goes with it. A lot of them transition as well. I mean, obviously this Samuels fella seems to be in some process of transitioning. You know, maybe next year he'll have some huge bolt-on boobs to go with that dress. It's just ridiculous. These people have no business around children at all.
This is the thing. Once you realize that the majority of them have been abused, and they will say they've been abused, you have compassion for them, but then you have to think, well, shouldn't we be protecting children from being put at risk of this abuse rather than celebrating the results of the abuse? I mean, the thought behind it is, well, we need to be inclusive. We want to welcome everybody. If these abused people turn out to be drag queens or flamboyant trans or what have you, we want to include them in society. Sure, there are ways that we can include them in society which don't include putting our children more at risk of them being abused or abusing others.
We can recognize you've got an issue. You know, just because you got Ebola doesn't mean I have to include you in everything. You know, it's like there's some things that are riskier to do. You know, it's like we're at the World Spit in My Mouth Championships and someone's got Ebola. You're not taking part, dude. and it's like, in terms of like with these trans and things, it's like there's so much abuse that's rife in their history that it's like, it's you shouldn't be putting yourself forward as a role model for kids, because it's like, there's clearly, you're a dude in a dress wearing a wig. You're not quite right. There's something a bit off about you, dude. And it's like, we definitely shouldn't be holding you up to kids and being like, check that dude out. He's got his SHID together. It's like, no, this is clearly someone who's like barely hanging on to reality.
It's introducing like gay porn to children, basically, at a very young age, and suggesting that's a good role model and that's absolutely fine. So it's good that this Women's Rights Network are speaking up about it. There's a magazine called Redux, which is very good on this trans issue. And I think that's put out by feminists. You also have these trans exclusionary radical feminists that are against the transing as well. And they're often very good. I mean, they do a lot of really good research and you know, you can't fault them on that. You might disagree with their feminist ideas, but you can't fault them on, you know, wanting to protect children. So
the only thing I'd hope is that they can make peace with the fact that they're going to get called bigots, because there was a number of them who didn't attend the Leeds protest because essentially there was only two sides to it. There was like the kind of pro-trans far left or patriotic alternative. And it's like, when we were up there in Leeds, we had a number of people who weren't with PA. We had a Muslim fella come up and like kind of speak to the lefty crowd and everything like that. It's like, we're not going to bite your head off. And it's like, one of these feminist types did a report of the demonstration, and she misrepresented us quite a bit, like kind of making stuff up wholesale to make us seem like kind of, I guess, more scary, more, you know, like kind of caricature Nazis. Like, I mean, everyone knows we've got our in PA Yorkshire, we've got our farm boy, you know, good lad, early 20s, and it's like, you know, doesn't swear, you know, all this kind of stuff. And this report this feminist wrote, so it's like, you know, oh, I didn't know which side to be on. You know, there was the pro-trans lot who kind of sickened me, and then on the other side there was, you know, far right patriotic alternative. And then they described Joe and said, oh, he was marching up and down shouting gays out. And I'm like, I was next to Joe all day. I mean, for one, he doesn't march up and down, and he definitely doesn't just start shouting gays out. Like, what does that even mean? And it's, I think they need to make peace with the fact that if you've got standards, you're going to fall on our side of things, because it's like the other side, like the slippery slope is real, and we're quite a ways down it now. So it's like, I understand at one point, you know, feminists in the far right were at each other's throats, but the kind of enemy of my enemy is my friend. And I think in the case of transing children and grooming on this scale, I think we should be able to come together and put aside our differences for something like a protest against this event.
Yeah, it should definitely be something that we should be able to find common ground with a lot of these other organisations, which, you know, which is a good thing. And it's good to see that the Women's Rights Network are pushing back against this. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Sam. I've enjoyed having you here.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I don't often get to talk politics in like long format like this, so it's really enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Do remember to check out the Real Britannia archive for earlier episodes. And, of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.